Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
Oh, look, it happened. Look at that. Right on time.
Oh, man.
Welcome back to Make Me Smart, everyone. The reason we're always laughing is because we are just delighted and also barely even prepared for the daily version of our podcast where Kai and I try our best to make today make sense. I'm Molly Wood. I just remembered my name. We're doing great,
I'm Kai
guys.
Rizdahl, and you know, we're doing the best we can. We're doing the best we can in crisis and plague time. So this is The Daily again. Not The Daily. It's The Daily edition of this podcast, which frankly is better, but that's neither here nor there. Molly and I each bring one news item we want to talk about as indicators of where we are, and then a little thing on the way out to make us smile. And we're done. Like, you know, 12, 15 minutes, we're out of here.
Just like that.
Do you like? What do you got? Yes,
pew,
boom.
Pew, pew.
What do you want?
I see that you are going to hit us with even more macroeconomics.
Well, no, look, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. And here's why I'm bringing this up, right? So we are Thursday now. Jay Powell came out today and said, here, economy, here's $2.3 trillion. And the stock market was happy, even though 6.6 million people have lost their jobs in the last week, 16 million over 3 weeks, 10% of the American workforce is now filing for unemployment claims. And so the question is, what else is happening, right? Because those are the headline numbers. And here is something that is happening that is not going to be easily fixed. Global trade, and Mitchell Hartman talked about this on Marketplace yesterday, but here's another indicator. Global trade is collapsing. And here's my indicator for today. Also a very good podcast, by the way, The Indicator. But this one's better. how much shade can one throw in 15 seconds?
Totally.
So look, global trade, as measured by in the port of Los Angeles and Long Beach, the biggest and busiest port complex in this country, trade in March was down 30.9%, right? So almost 31% in March on an annual basis, which is insane, right? Mm-hmm. That's empty containers, that's goods not moving into the economy, that's stuff not getting to the store shelves. All of these things matter, and it is not a thing that bounces back easily, because what happens when there isn't cargo to be carried is that ships are put up, they're not used, crews find other jobs, and it doesn't start up again with the flip of a switch. And I just think that's a useful indicator. It came out yesterday in a publication called Logistics Management, which, you know, bless all you logistics
Amazing.
Professionals out there, right?
Yeah.
But like, it's a real thing, and it will not bounce back mediamente, as we say.
Yeah, and when you say trade, all I hear is stuff coming in and stuff going out.
Right.
That stuff being like flour and toys and clothes, right? All of it.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the Port of Los Angeles, I mocked you a tiny bit because you do love your websites with the outdated fonts. I'm learning more about this every day.
That's so funny. I wasn't even thinking about that. I'm like, all right.
This is the most time we've spent together, and I'm realizing how many websites with outdated fonts are involved in your life.
Oh, man.
That said, the Port of Los Angeles famously, volumes at this port are famously like one of the indicators that Warren Buffett has always said that he uses to mark economic activity. And I think back in February, he was like, whoa, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yep. So that's my little tidbit for the day.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or not. That's not a good one.
It is what it is.
Know that this is a little bit of a preview in some ways to our show coming up on Tuesday.
Yeah. Good for you.
In which we are going to, right? Uh-huh. Cross promo. In which we are going to talk a little bit about these supply chains.
Is it a cross promo if it's the same basic crew and comp?
Same show,
podcast?
I guess. I guess not if it's the exact same show tomorrow on Marketplace Tech.
That's right.
I have been following and been very interested in this story about startups, of course. We talked about this already, startups and the Small Business Administration and this question of whether they could apply for these loans. And one of the questions I asked the VC we had on was, well, like, listen, is there just less sympathy for venture-backed startups, because there's all these perceptions about the industry and the silliness of some of these businesses and this and that and the other thing. So sure enough, in .LA today, a publication I've gotten very familiar with, thanks to senior editor Jody Becker, there is this question, there's this whole piece about whether there's a moral quandary with respect to startups applying for taxpayer-funded aid because they are venture-backed. And because in theory, VCs own them and they should or at least have had easy access to capital. And it's really interesting because there's a Sacramento-based software consultancy. Its CEO has basically been tweeting and saying, absolutely not. VC-backed companies have so many advantages already over bootstrapped small businesses that they don't need another one paid for by taxpayers, is the quote. Another VC partner said there's a money grab going on right now by venture-backed startups that this program should exclude because these firms are behind them and could be able to fund them. And it just got me thinking about it, because I think I can see this argument from both sides. On the one hand, yes, they do have some advantages built in. Also, venture capital is risky capital. So these companies were funded with the assumption, at least on the side of their investors, that a lot of them were going to fail. Most, in fact, right? They were always a risk. That said, they collectively employ millions of people, millions of human beings.
That's where I was going to go. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. And right. I don't think you can parse it out like that. I just don't. And like the VC we had on pointed out, venture capital firms are not like, sure, there are some angel investors and things like that, but venture capital funds are made up of other people's money. A lot of that money is pension funds, institutional investors, banks. It's not like it's just rich jerk money. There's this kind of like rich jerk divide happening here that I think is leaving out. I even did it with the WeWork story. And SoftBank pulling out of that bailout, I was like, oh, boo-hoo, Adam Neumann isn't going to get his $900 million, forgetting that was the money that was going to ensure the payouts for lots of employees.
Yeah, I think the problem actually with the rich jerk thing is not that it's about their companies. It's about the VCs themselves are rich jerks, right?
Kinda.
And that's why they suffer reputationally. Yeah, for sure.
And some
I had the same thought when I heard that on tech this morning. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Really? Yeah. What, the rich jerk or the part like, should they really get this money?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. Right? Are we going to socialize the gains and privatize the gains and socialize the losses? You know, I don't know.
Right. And maybe. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I think it is a slightly bit more of a quandary. Not a quandary, though. Mm-hmm. Not a quandary. Is that like while a lot of us are sitting in our houses and ordering delivery, people are delivering them. And it's like this, it's this constant thing that weighs on our mind of like, is it okay to get delivery? Is it okay to go to a grocery store where a worker is being put at risk and so on and so forth? So many of these companies could be doing more to help their employees, even if they classify them as independent contractors, to wit, Instacart. Where apparently...
Go ahead, counselor. You have the floor.
And furthermore, Instacart... Apparently people, the worst humans in the world, have been baiting Instacart shoppers into delivery with these huge tips. Then once the food is delivered, they go back and they change the tip to zero. Now,
what is
that's like
with
the
people?
Worst thing I've ever heard. I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah.
That is awful. But Instacart could easily... ban those users. And so I'm just saying, please do that. Like, please just take care of your workers. Take care of them. That's all.
So I wonder, and this is fodder for a larger and longer conversation, but I wonder if one of the, and even as I say this, I know that American capitalism will reject me and slap me down. I wonder if it's possible that as a result of this collective episode, right? Trauma's too strong, but collective experience that we're having. The less fortunate in this economy and those who do some of the really sometimes distasteful jobs, but otherwise just drudgery jobs that the rest of us rely on and don't actually think about too much, I wonder if we're going to start thinking about it more. I don't know.
I mean, I think so. I really do. And I know I hear your point about American capitalism, but I'm seeing it. Yeah. I am also fairly optimistic about
I was just going to say, of the two of us, Ms. Wood,
It's I am filled with a futile and often infuriating hope. But I am also seeing a lot of tweets where people are like, thank you to, you know, I mean, it was like, I've been going to the little club quarantine thing on Instagram with DJ D-Nice. You guys have to go to this. It's incredible.
Okay. All right.
It's like live. Just look up, you know, DJ D-Nice on Instagram, and he does this live shows. Like, he just plays music. Dang. But one day I was in there. It's sort of taken off, and all these famous people were in there. Like, Beyonce was in there, and Queen Latifah, and Michelle Obama, and Elizabeth Warren, and Mark Zuckerberg was in there. I mean, it's just bananas. This is like club quarantine. It's a thing. But I think it was Queen Latifah put a comment in there, and she was like, shout out to the medical workers and the grocery store workers and the delivery people. Oh, she was like, they're heroes. Yeah. So when you have like this whole level of people being like, grocery store workers are heroes, like, let's hope that lasts.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
What a nice segue into the smiley section.
No, that's good. So, what's yours? I haven't even looked at the link yet.
Oh, no. I want to know about yours because it doesn't seem very smiley. Oh. But first, we need the music.
Well, no, it's okay. All right.
There it is.
It may not be smiley. It made me smile for reasons which will become clear as I tell you this story. So I exercise early in the morning. I go out and I run, or I ride my bike sometimes. And I came back the other day after a pensive and thoughtful ride. And I asked Twitter what they maybe it was like 2 weeks ago, what Twitter thought about loogies and farmer blows in the age of coronavirus. There was much opprobrium directed at me, and they said, good God, no, that's terrible. You can't do that. And I said, okay, fine. That's probably true. I appreciate that. And then today, and so I've been really careful, right? And so I'm wearing a little thing when I bike, and I'm keeping all my secretions to myself. We've talked about this, right? Yes.
Never gets old.
But here's the deal. So people have been tweeting at me this Belgian-Dutch study on exactly this topic, right?
Oh my God, that's amazing.
What about the effluvia that comes out from your nose and your mouth when you're running, and how close is close enough and how close is safe to be running next to or with somebody? And here is the science. And it's from, as I said, some Dutch and Belgian universities whose names I can't pronounce. Here's the key thing in the post that I saw. The scientists advise that for walking, the distance of people moving in the same direction in one line, you should be 4 to 5 meters apart. That is to say 15 feet, right?
Whoa.
So none of this 6 feet stuff. And then if you're running behind somebody, you should be 10 meters behind them. And if you're biking hard and really exercising, you should be 20 meters behind them, because there is a slipstream of droplets, shall we say, that come off that if you want to be safe and you're biking hard, be 60 feet behind somebody. And I just thought that was really interesting. And we'll put this up on the page. And there's a descriptor, and there are pictures of atomized droplets of stuff flowing out. And apparently the big droplets are more dangerous to you if they hit you, but they fall faster. So that anyway, it's yeah. So that made me smile.
Loogies
today. People are, you know, paying attention.
And effluvia. All those people on Nextdoor are validated, because there are a lot of angry people on Nextdoor complaining about people running by them. Yeah. What if your sweat gets on me?
For sure. For sure. No, that's legit. So I will be backing the heck off.
I am like in love with all of the stories about bosses trying to take care of their people. Obviously, there are plenty of stories to the contrary, but there was this wonderful story. You know how you like the greatest, all the good dive bars have stuff pinned to the
walls.
Oh, wait,
can we interrupt here for a minute? Wait, I need to interrupt. Tony Wagner tells me the study has been debunked. Thank you, Vice. All right, fine. But still, look, stay away from people and cover your mouth and nose when you're running.
Yeah, come
on. Sorry I interrupted you.
And they did a simulation and everything.
How to torpedo me, Tony. God.
You can't, I know, God. You just can't trust anything on the internet anymore, turns out.
Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead.
I will happily stay 60 feet away from bikers, though. All the best dive bars have stuff pinned to the walls, like business cards and, in many cases, dollar bills. And there is at the Sand Bar in Georgia, which now there's nobody in there. She was like looking around. The owner of the bar was looking around. And she was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of money on these walls. And she took all the money down, $3,714, and gave it to her employees.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know.
That's awesome.
Because she had to lay her staff off, and so then she just gave them all the money. Oh, and then they repainted it all pretty in like flamingo colors.
The best part is that all that money was up there before coronavirus was a thing, so you know it's clean. Look, stuff matters.
It's probably the cleanest money in the world right now.
That's right.
All right. That made me smile. That is it for us.
Yes, good for
we
you.
Will be back here, by the way, same time tomorrow. And tomorrow's Friday. Hallelujah.
Oh, God.
In a little behind the scenes note, you should know that we moved up our taping a half an hour so we can get you the show a half an hour. And there are some among us who think that 3:30 is a little early to have beer on Friday, but I am not one of those people.
Who said that? I don't know.
Okay. I said it to myself in my brain because I'm like a crazy person. Then I decided I don't care.
Please.
Having a 3:30 beer.
So tell us what you want to know about what's happening. Questions is the subject line. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org is the address. We do What Do You Want to Know Wednesdays. That's a week from yesterday, as it is every time on a Thursday. emails, voice memos, whatever you want. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org. Hit us up.
Bring it. Bring the mid-show buzzkills. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer and whiz with the Google is Tony Wagner. Our senior producer is Jody Becker. Ben Heathcote produces video with the help of our intern, Ethan Peretz. And thanks to writer-producer, Erica Phillips.
Drew Jostad engineered today. The theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. There we go.
Deborah Clark. One thing about Erica Phillips, I now know thanks to Zoom. Such cool white glasses.
Oh, yeah, cool. She's got the frames, man.
The coolest white glasses.
And you know what? She can carry them off, too. I could not put those on my face.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. I would look absurd.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.